Good afternoon. Welcome to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
What a great show we have for you today. You'll be glad you've tuned in, as you are every day you tune us in. I'm sure happy you're tuning in. Nicholas Gonzalez is with us. He is a co-founder of a company called Stella. There are so many things advancing in technology today. It's almost mind-boggling, and the tools that are coming our way are sincerely really cool tools. Nicholas has a great story. Their company is developing a wearable that detects how much of the UV light your rays you're getting from the sun, because you get too much of that and you end up with skin cancer. And I think it's not, I don't know whether it's at epidemic proportions today, but so many people are getting skin cancer. Nicholas Gonzalez has got a story about how you might be able to get some information that helps you avoid that. After that, we've got Mark Schmidt on. Schmidty is his name. He has developed a really cool, get this, another tool, but it's not so much a tech circuit board tool, but he's taken traditional carabiners, the things that rock climbers use to hang on, and you know, if you fall, it catches, well, the carabiner locks on the rope and catches. That's really cool. He's done some amazing stuff with a carabiner. Who knew? I mean, it's like the post-it note all over again, the post-it note for everyday life. And Montana, I know you're kind of a carabiner.
I'm a carabiner nut.
You have them everywhere.
I love them. I have them everywhere. I have my keys hanging on them. I clip them onto my saddle. They're on my waist belt when I go hiking. I love them.
Extremely handy.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but you put so many on the horse that he's having a little trouble.
Nice. Yeah. Thanks for that.
You know something funny I was thinking about today? Earlier, when we first started this show about a month ago as a daily, we had Jim Morrison and Jimi Hendrix about back-to-back, maybe a week apart,
right.
Musicians that are dead now. Yesterday, we had somebody from the Tecate group, and today we've got somebody from Stella, both beer companies.
No kidding.
So if there's any tech company out there that's going by the name like Budweiser, I think we have to get them on next, just to continue this tech theme of beer.
Nice trend.
I doubt you. He named it after the beer company, but you know, just a funny coincidence.
That is. You are a wealth of information this morning. Nicholas Gonzalez, thanks for being here today.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're the CEO and co-founder of Stella. It's a company focused on digital healthcare and wearable tech. Almost everybody you see today has either looked at getting, you know, some wearable tech or has something. It's a pretty vibrant and healthy marketplace. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing at Stella that adds some value to the wearables.
Happy to do so. So one of the things that we want to do is we want to make sure that one person can purchase one wearable and have all these health-oriented features in that wearable. Also have a modular approach so that, you know, if you're allergic to pollen, we're not saturating the application with like a pollen page to alert you. You download these widgets based on whatever, you know, health features you're interested in, which is a new take.
That sincerely a cool idea. So the tech that you wear is programmable based on the widgets that you downloaded to it.
Bingo. So
that is awesome.
It's very hard to, bring a modular product in regards to hardware. But when it comes to software, your opportunities are infinite. So if we can change the way our software affects the hardware, then we can provide more features. So the main feature is this UV technology that allows people to prevent themselves from getting overexposed to UV radiation based on their skin type. So it's personalized. And we can also track vitamin D intake from the sun, because it's very important, as well as all your, you know, typical features that you'll find in the standard of wearables, which is sleep tracking, activity tracking.
Are you inputting the data about your skin tone, or does the wearable somehow know just by putting it on that
so
this is your skin type?
We're using the Fitzpatrick scale, which is the medical standard of skin types. So that's what we use. So you just select, it's between skin type 1 and 6. You select.
So when you download the widget, you tell it which skin type you think you are, right?
Correct.
And that gives you the information then. Let me back up. I want to get to the questions about the different widgets you have. What got you into the wearable tech business, especially focused on skin cancer?
So my dad is a surgeon, aesthetic reconstructive surgeon, and school was just not my main thing. So med school is kind of out of the picture. But I've always been really interested in health. You know, I think when a person's healthy, you know, they feel better about themselves, and that has a strong ripple effect in society. So that's kind of like the you know, the philosophy behind it. But I think the main reason I got into it is, like I said, it's magic. None of your five natural senses can detect information coming from a wearable going into your phone, but it's real. You know, it's happening there. So it's quite magical. And this UV technology has been around for a while, but no one's really, you know, got this technology and applied it to, you know, in something like what we're doing. So I see it as every author has, what is it, 24, 26 letters of the alphabet that they can use to create a story. You know, as an engineer, you have these engineering building blocks, transistors, resistors, and it's how you rearrange these components that you can create your own story. So that's what makes us very separate than any other wearable company out there.
And your path to here, did you come out of an engineering background or did you come out of a tech background? What got you as a co-founder of a tech wearable company?
So I've always been a big fan of popular science and just science in general.
Me too.
I'm a huge fan. After working at 3D Robotics, I really loved the startup environment. It was just amazing how, like, the person that, you know, cleans the office is sitting down next to the CEO and with the engineer. And it was something really unique, something really fresh. And I was like, this is the industry I want to get into. Tech is something that's really interesting. So I got into 3D Robotics and I left to go build carbon fiber products. And then I went into a financial firm in Miami and I wasn't really happy there. So right before I went to Miami, I met our CTO through YouTube. You know, who answers YouTube messages? Like,
I didn't know there were YouTube messages.
You know, I was just pretty much, you know, kind of desperate to find, you know, someone.
Your CTO, Chief Technology Officer.
Correct,
right?
Correct. Okay. So I sent him a message and saying, hey, you know, I have this idea. It looks like you have kind of the foundation for this technology. You want to work together? And he said, yeah, but I was already in Miami at that time. And after a while, I was just like, you know what? I was living at a 5-star, you know, hotel. I just walked to work. I had a beautiful office looking South Beach, and I'm like, I'm getting used to this. Like, this is the lifestyle I'm getting used to. I can't do this. Like, it's just there has to be more to life than just this. You see, a lot of people who don't have money, once they have, they think that once they have money, all their problems, you know, get solved. No. After 3 months, it doesn't matter how much money you make, you get used to it. It becomes a standard, and then you start feeling bad for yourself for whatever reason.
Because if you're unhappy when you're poor, you're likely to be unhappy when you're wealthy.
That's the secret. If you can be happy with very little things, you're going to be extremely ecstatic when you're when you're wealthy. I think that's a secret. So what I decided to do is I just took a huge leap of faith. Like, no rational thought said, hey, you know what, this is the best way to, you know, come by.
Starting a business isn't rational most of the time for most people. Nicholas Gonzalez is with us. Stella is his company. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
When we come back, we're going to find out how this tech works with you. Stay tuned.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. Today we're broadcasting from the ESET studios. ESET Internet Security, do more. Want a podcast of the show? Of course you do. Go to ESPN1700.com. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. Glad you're with us today. We've got a lot going on here. Nicholas Gonzalez is with us, CEO of Stella, company that makes wearables, and they're really cool concept. We'll talk about it in just a second. After that, Mark Schmidt's with us. He's got a company that really does some cool things with traditional carabiners. I mean, come on. It's like you see them all the time everywhere. In Montana, you're a big carabiner person.
I am, and there is nothing traditional about these.
They're very cool, though. It's
a lot of fun.
So we're going to hear from Mark coming up in just a few minutes. Let's get back to Nicholas Gonzalez. Nicholas, thanks again for coming in.
Happy to be here.
Talking about your trek to get to the point where you're developing a company, and I want to get to the technology in just a second, because pretty amazing things about miniaturizing the... I'm looking at the samples you brought in, and you almost need a magnifying glass to see the actual circuit board, because it's so tiny. But I want to finish up on your path to get here. Doing a startup company in a tech world isn't an easy path, and a lot of people don't do it because it's really hard, and they don't have the passion for it. Did you experience tough times as you're getting through this, or was it all pretty easy for you?
Absolutely. Everyone goes through tough times. I guess for me, the tough time was, quitting my career in Miami, leaving my comfort zone. And when I left, I left a six-figure contract. I didn't get the money. I left. I just flew directly to San Diego. I said San Diego is the place to be for me. I love California. It had culture there.
What drew you here? The tech? The culture, the people.
I tried to do this also in Miami, but it just wasn't working out. The culture wasn't there. The people weren't there. They weren't very supportive in regards to tech startups. So I came down here, but everyone thought I was literally crazy. And they thought I was crazy. They're like, how are you leaving six-figure contract? Like my own parents were like, you're not coming back here. Like Everyone made it like almost impossible for me to come back. And I remember the last night in Miami, I was like, should I really, really do this? And then, like, my rational thoughts were like, no, stay. But in my heart, I know it sounds super cliche, but in my heart, it was like, get on the plane. You're going to find a way to work it out.
So you did what Cortez did when he landed in Mexico. He burned the ships. So they had no choice. They couldn't go.
Yeah.
Right?
But I got to say that when I was in, I was living in a van with a friend. Like, that's how like low we were, you know? I never felt so liberated in my life, and I knew that I was going to bounce back. So I would be showering at LA Fitness, and what I did is I downloaded the Meetup app and just started getting in contact with people in the community, making the right connections.
Wow.
And slowly but surely, we started getting some traction. And then, family and friends. And it's funny because you're thinking, man, I need like 1,000 people to support me. No, you just need one. And that one person introduced two. And if you have this compound effect, your network
grows. The career makers, the one person that makes your career, makes your business, can do that for you. So you've gotten to the point now where the wearable tech that you're producing, you actually have prototypes made at this point, right?
Yeah, so we developed different mobile applications, and right now we're working on our seventh prototype. We've developed many prototypes before. We have like around five or six. The one is kind of a signature project. We just did it for fun. We wanted to make a printed circuit board like the size of a nickel that did everything that we basically do right now. The reason why we wanted to develop this technology so small is because of the design flexibility that it brings. But it's also an engineering marvel, because when you have a smaller circuit board, it's also running more efficient.
Seriously, that's a good point. The electrons have fewer micromillimeters to travel.
Exactly.
Interesting point. And now, this is a wrist wearable item that we're talking about, correct? Or will it be wearable someplace else?
So the best place for you to wear this wearable in regards to the UV technologies on the wrist. But we're also making an attachable where you can use it as a clip, or you can put it as an ankle band when you're running. Because people strap on their Fitbits on their wrist to count steps. And I find that, hey, you don't walk with your hands, you walk with your feet. So we're giving it the ability for people to use it as an attachable or as a wristband. But if you look at, if you go to stellawearables.com and you see the wearable for yourself, you see that the design of it is just, I think it's a work of art. It was inspired by a golden brick.
Do you think we're just going to get to the point where we have a chip implanted in us, and that will be the wearable that you can then download, keep updating software to?
So that a lot of people sometimes, ask me that question. I'm actually trying to lead the industry to prevent that from happening, because I think it's very invasive. I think that wearable technology is going to play a critical role in our culture, but I think that giving that freedom to a human being to just disconnect whenever they want, I think they're going to value that way more than having a chip.
The whole injection thing is almost prophetic, biblical, like end of times kind of thought for a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, some people would reject that right off the bat because of the whole Bible thing.
I'm with you, too. I think what we think as Orwellian, our children might think differently, right? Yeah. They might have just grow up with it and then think a chip is. But I'm in the same boat. I think being able to take it off and disconnect is something that a lot of people are going to want.
I mean, essentially, we're already implanting chips in people for hearing aids and replacing the cochlear. Yeah. So we're already doing that a little bit. But to take technology that's not needed for something and inject it in your body is a little bit different for most people. The tech that you have at Stella, right now, we've been talking about measuring UV rays for the protection against cancer. What other kinds of things are your wearables going to be able to examine or look at? And will it all be in one wearable?
So we're going to have a product line, of course, but for this one wearable, we're going to be able to, you know, offer personalized burn rates so that people can see their burn rate before they're overexposed, but through the mobile application.
Burn rate meaning burn from the sun.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And then through the wearable, they'll have immediate notifications just in case, you know, they don't have their phone around. We also track daily vitamin D intake from the sun. We offer sub-accounts for parents who don't want to buy a wearable for their children so they can put their children's profile so they can monitor their children's UV exposure.
That's
as
a cool idea.
Yeah, and the heart rate sensor to predetermine heat strokes, and if your heart rate goes too high or too low, to just really bring a personalization to the wearable game, I think is kind of our goal. And touching on what you said about innovation and all these new things, you know, I think as a society, we need to drive innovation more and more. But then there's a difference between innovating and applying that technology into our day-to-day lives. So I think we should be exploring different opportunities, but then applying that is very dangerous. And I think we got to, you know, approach technology and integration of technology in our personal lives with great caution, because a lot of these people do not even know how this works, and they're putting things in their body. And yeah. I don't think that's
interesting. Is your tech is customizable though with software, correct?
Correct.
How does that work?
Oh, that's kind of the secret sauce. But what we kind of wanted to do is we
love
wanted
it when
bring...
people reveal their secrets on the air here, because
bringing a modular approach. So we have the standard, which is the UV technology and also the activity. But
Nicholas, let me interrupt you. I want to find out about how you customize or whatever you're willing to reveal to us when we get back. Nicholas Gonzalez is here. Stella is his company. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing and Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't you dare go anywhere. We have a lot more when we get back.
This is fun.
Us.
I like
yes,
this.
It is.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. You're listening to us on ESPN 1700, but did you know you can watch us too? Watch us on Facebook. Visit our Biz Talk radio page. Share your comments, ask your questions, and of course, we always appreciate your likes. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
I'm Bob Ryan, and don't forget to share when you like us. Or like us when you share.
We'll take either.
I don't know which comes first, but do both. Do both. It helps out a lot. Nicholas Gonzalez is with us. We're talking about Stella and wearable tech. After that, Mark Schmidt will be here talking about the coolest little, coolest ideas. Take traditional carabiners and make them a multi-tool. You're going to love that. Let's get back to Nicholas. Nicholas, thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
So much to talk about and so little time. We were talking about how your tech is modifiable by the consumer a little bit. You said there's some secret sauce in there you don't want to talk about. But the basic idea is that the tech will be able to do more than one thing depending upon the application you pick, or how would you describe that?
So the best way to describe it is that we have a standard for features for everyone, which we feel is just the standard.
Like the UV detector is going to be
and
in
the activity
everyone.
And sleep.
Right.
But for like little things like whether it's pollen or whether they're trying to, you know, check for you know, a skin spot and then send that skin spot, take a picture of it and send it to their dermatologist. All these little in-house widgets that we're going to be offering are just to create better efficiency in our healthcare market. And
I
our
love
their system. Yeah. So we're not trying to jam pack everything to confuse everyone. It's like, you know, Bob, you there's going to be things that you're going to be interested in. So feel free to download them. But why am I going to try to shove all these products down your throat when you don't want them?
I need something that shocks me when I go to get ice cream out of the freezer.
I can vouch for that one.
Is this something that doctors are interested in? Could you have a direct feed or share this information with your individual general practitioner?
That's our full intention, to be able to for the user to export the data and give that data to their doctor so that they can make, you know, better decisions. So take the vitamin D instance. We don't tell people how much vitamin D intake they should have. We just track it. They export that data to their doctor who's treating them, you know, in this case, someone who has vitamin D deficiency. And then they can see, they can correlate how that data from their vitamin D intake fluctuates with their blood levels.
Now, so, you've got prototypes developed. How long before you actually launch the product into the marketplace?
We're hoping that we can launch this between March, April, May. Those are the 3 months. We haven't, you know, set a date formally for when we're going to launch, but we hope that we can launch in April.
How long have you been working on it leading up to now?
2 years.
2 years.
So you're talking April of next year.
Correct.
Obviously. Okay.
So for consumers who are interested in this product, there's been a lot of work. You know, we were just trying to make the best quality product out there.
And there's a website right now. It's
StellaWearables.com.
StellaWearables.com is the website. And on there, I'm guessing you'll have some kind of information that people could know or follow along when this is going to be available. Are you thinking you're going to launch this through retail outlets, or will it be online at first? What's your kind of idea about how people will be able to purchase these?
Initially, we're probably going to do something through crowdsourcing, through like Kickstarter or through Indiegogo. But we're not using Indiegogo or Kickstarter to raise money. We're using it as a marketing platform, which if there's any entrepreneurs listening to me right now, use it as a marketing
platform.
Seriously,
so you can use Kickstarter as a marketing program?
That's the way you should be using
it.
And I know there's going to be people to disagree with me.
I only think about it as a fundraising tool.
Yeah, me too.
Think about it. If I launch right now to raise money, then I'm letting every big company know, hey, look, I got something really good, especially if I'm successful, right? They're all going to look at this. Then I still have to get manufacturing certifications. I got to do all these things. That's giving a huge major corporation like 6 months in advance to look at our company and you know, apply that, you know, technology. You see this with Doppler Labs with Apple and their AirPods. They basically saw that campaign. They refined it. They cut the price in half. And what is Doppler Labs going to do? You can't compete with the AirPod now. So what we wanted to do is we rely on our initial investors as well as organizations like the Skin Cancer Foundation. We're going to kind of partner up with them. We're going to have all these units manufactured so that when we do Kickstarter and Indiegogo, as soon as that's done, we can carry that momentum over to our e-commerce site and we can give them the product. They don't have to wait 6 months down the line. That's the main thing for me to do is to be able to not only carry on that momentum, but to amplify that momentum. And I can only do that is if I raise money, you know, before and then use it as a marketing platform.
How big a challenge was it to raise capital for your idea? Was it significant? I mean, was it a real hard road, or did you have, you know, this is hard work, but I got it done. Okay. Where were you at on a scale, let's say 1 to 10, how hard it was?
It's very hard to say, but the two key things that I would tell any entrepreneur is you got to find the right investor. Not just because someone has money, they shouldn't be in investing in your
company. They should add some value another way as well, right?
Absolutely, strategic like a strategic partnership. Like they're giving you money, and you know they're also giving you advice and
maybe
things
take
like
a
that.
Seat on the board, be involved in the connecting you up with different aspects of the company, that kind of thing.
Absolutely, you know, finding the right investor and trying to, you know, don't rush in and try to give them a term sheet or anything like that. Just trying to talk to them, try to agree on the valuation of the company. And the other component to this is luck. Now, luck is not something that's very controllable, but what you can do, and what my definition of luck is, you get all these opportunities day in and day out. Sometimes people don't even realize the opportunities that they have. But if you're prepared, then you could take advantage of the opportunities. But guess what? If I'm not prepared, and then let's say I meet the best investor, I'm not going to be able to make anything from that because I'm not prepared for that opportunity. So
I heard a definition of luck. It's an exceedingly insane amount of preparation meeting an opportunity.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And just the harder you work, the luckier you get, I think, right?
Yeah. I look at, you know, at, you know, how we've been able to basically grow the company and how we were able to, like, network, and it's just amazing.
We're coming to the end of this, so I know that I've got so many more questions, but when you were in Miami looking at coming to San Diego, you came here because you thought this culture was the right place to be. Now that you're here, do you still believe that? Is San Diego, the community, the tech community, the fundraising, is it still as good as you thought it was going to be?
100%, if not better. I think the partnerships here with the universities and that you're in the same time zone as San Francisco as well as Mexico, there's so many opportunities here. I think San Diego's a gold mine. You have Tijuana where you can have manufacturing and then you can just put that on a freight, transfer over to San Diego where you have your corporation and then you can, you know, send products all over the world from where you're at. Also, you're what is it, like less than a 2-hour flight to San Francisco?
Yep.
A lot of people think like deal flow is not the same as in San Francisco. They're right, but there's still a lot of good quality investors here, and it's a very tight-knit community. I was talking to Aaron earlier. he's dropping down names, and I know all these people. I've met them. That's beautiful. You know, you don't get that in Miami. You don't get that in New York or San Francisco. The community here is really, you know, tight, and, you know, I'm just very happy to be a part of it.
And we have that little company here called Qualcomm that's kind of a draw for some technology, right?
Yeah. And then there's Evo Nexus, there's Connect, there's also a few other places
Diego
that you
Ventures
can go.
Group, a ton of them. The community is ripe for the right entrepreneurs.
Absolutely.
StellaWearables.com?
Correct.
That's it. Nicholas Gonzalez, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Cool. Great idea. Up next, Mark Schmidt. We're going to talk about carabiners. Who knew such cool ideas existed? You're listening. You're still listening to Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Schmidt.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'll get my mouth right soon. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank our engineer, Jeff Bilodeau, our music by Derek Audette, our interns, Sarah, Andrew, Leah, Deidre, and Chrissy. I'm Montana Schmidt.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan, and we are so happy we have our interns in studio today because yesterday was so tough without everybody. It's amazing. Thank you guys for everything you do. We really appreciate it very much. I like it when we have an audience, too. It makes me feel like we're doing something important because I have to imagine everybody out there listening. Now there's actually people here listening.
Oh, yeah. We love the energy.
It's fun. Mark Schmidt is with us. Schmidty is his name. He has a company that's doing some very cool things, Art Function Group of Companies. Schmidty, welcome.
Thank you.
Glad you could be with us today.
Appreciate it.
You have quite the history in the business world and the people you know. I want to get to the carabiners in just a second. The Click Carabiner, that's a cool thing. We'll tell everybody about it. But just a little bit about your history and background. Did you start off in the skateboarding industry building decks? Is that where it was?
Actually, before that, I was a professional skateboarder when I was a young man, and it's very difficult to transition from being a professional athlete to getting into the civilian workforce. Parents tried to send me through Coleman College and get me into technology, and I wasn't having anything about that. So I started fixing surfboards and wound up with a job at a surf shop, which pulled me into skateboard retail, which pulled me into skateboard wholesale, which pulled me into product creation, and then building companies within the action sports
just
space.
Just a quick, do you still get on a board once in
a while? Oh, absolutely.
Do you really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Daily.
San Diego's
daily.
Kind
Seriously.
Of a mecca for skateboarding, right? A lot of people don't know, but this is kind of ground zero for the skateboarding counterculture.
Absolutely. Just don't ask me to do a kickflip down a 10 stair.
Not anymore, at least.
Yeah, I like the rail thing. I like to watch it because there's that whole thing. You go on YouTube and there's all the wipeouts, you know, the rail fails. Wow, they look painful.
painful beyond measure. There's actually a significant portion of skateboarders doing that probably won't be able to procreate. So it's Darwinism taking place.
I thought it's all about how you
in
fall,
real time.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, it's, yeah.
Well, I've broken a lot of things on my body, but not that so far.
Well, and most of the time we're protecting those. But
yeah.
when you got a millionth of a second to either make or break, you know, a rail trick, a lot of times you're not. Yeah. Your calculus is wrong.
I've done all the tricks I've seen, just not once have I ever done it on purpose. Yeah.
Very nice.
And back in the day, did you start skating? I don't think you're old enough to. We used to take skates, like roller skates with the metal wheels.
Sure.
Break them apart and screw them on the bottom of a plank.
So I was born in 63, so that's still clay wheel era, so I was absolutely in that. But the magic came in the 70s when all of a sudden you had the urethane wheels and the precision bearings.
Yeah.
And you were riding on a cloud, and when you're a kid and all of a sudden you move from, you know, the crappy big wheel to your really nice Schwinn with a stick shift, was the equivalent
was
in the skateboard
cool.
world.
Yeah, and we have famous Tony Hawk being one of the most famous here in San Diego. He still lives here, right?
Oh, yeah. North County guy. We actually work really closely with his foundation. He's closing in on 50 years old, and for him to be able to do what he does at 50, all I can do is bow to what he does and his mission, and he's an amazing guy.
Wow. So you have fast-forwarded through a bunch of experiences that you've had in the business world, a lot of it regarding athletics and sporting-type things. Now you're at the helm of a company that makes carabiners, but a really different way to look at how a carabiner does. And for those that are listening that don't know what it is, it's the thing that rock climbers clip onto the rope to keep them from falling off if they lose their balance.
Foundational okay. tool of rock climbing.
It
absolutely.
Is. And what are the spikes called that you nail into the rock? And
There's crampons.
That's it.
So you got spikes on your things that you can put on your feet I forget what they're called, but anyway.
The crampons, that's the name I was looking for.
Yeah, the crampons go on your feet.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So tell us a little about the Click Carabiner and what you're doing here.
So one of my big projects in my previous skateboard company, at a manufacturing and distribution company, was the T-Tool. And it became the tool of the skateboard market. So there was, back in the days you're talking about, the clay wheel days, there was a skate key. So I created...
There's a song about this skate key, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Skater Dater, whatever it yeah. was. But anyway, on the T-Tool, we were one of the first companies that did a designed in California, made in China move. So we had a huge cost advantage. We had a patented product, and we sold millions of these T-Tools.
Seriously?
I left that company in 2006, and I thought, okay, what am I going to do now? I'm no longer the guy with the T-Tool. So I thought, let's take the tool set and put it on an everyday wearable, an EDC project, everyday carry, and the carabiner form.
EDC is a thing?
Well, like EDC is an acronym for everyday carry.
And right, is that a thing, or did you just make that up?
Oh, no, that's I'd love to say
so
I made
my
that. Just
that's an actual thing.
EDC carry. Is an actual thing, absolutely.
Okay, cool.
So getting, it's taking the tool set that you needed that originally wasn't really in your pocket, was more in a backpack, and then putting it in a place where it was not just a keychain, but something that could secure your keychain to your pants. Oh, and by the way, let's say you're at the skate park, your carabiner tool could hold your backpack up on the fence so you can see it no matter where you are, so your stuff's not getting stolen. There were enough aha moments in the development of a new tool in that market to where we thought, all right, this is going to be a really cool thing. And the really fun thing over the last couple of years is taking our knowledge of these little niche markets that we've been playing in and then applying them to broad consumer spaces.
So the Click Carabiner, the one that we're looking at here, can you describe this tool? Because you have, it's a carabiner, but it's not the typical shiny metal that you would think about, right? This particular one that we're looking at?
So all these can be seen at clickcarabiners.com.
There we go. So clickcarabiner.com.
Yep. So anyway, this is a ski tool, or it's a ski carabiner. So basically, to keep skis tuned, your DIN settings tuned, you need
a
number 3.
You're talking about snow skis, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And is this not metal because you're out in the cold?
Well, because your tongue would stick to it, obviously.
There we go. Yes, because you put them in your mouth a lot, right?
Right. So it being plastic is absolutely one of the reasons we kept
cool.
it that way. But the main reason was cost. So we were originally machining these out of billet aluminum. They were beautiful. They looked like jewelry, but they were $99 each at retail, which works for a percentage of the ski market, but we wanted to be a little bit more broad-based. So now we have an injection molded part. It's a co-mold injection. So there's a softer rubber on the outside, a harder plastic on the inside, a stainless steel cage inside here that actually holds the tools. And the thing that's really neat is that the tools rotate out. So you can have a gloved hand while you're on the ski mountain, whether you're snowboarding or skiing, a gloved hand roll over the tools, give you access to that.
That's so cool.
And then all of a sudden you're adjusting your equipment and you're on your way. And now back to one of the secrets we discovered about the carabiner. So this is something that you're wearing on your outside. So in other words, on belt loop or a loop hanging off your jacket.
Schmitty, let me ask you to hold that.
Okay.
We'll get back to that in just a second. Wow, this is a cool idea. I love this kind of stuff. Taking a normal everyday tool and turning it into something way better. Wow, you're listening to Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Stay with us. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. We're broadcasting from the ESET studios, ESET Internet Security. Do more. Get a podcast of today's show and any of our previous shows. Now we're talking. Go to ESPN1700.com. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. And don't forget, we need good ratings. We've just been in this time slot for a little bit here. And the way to help us out with that, is go to ESPN1700.com and listen to one of the, well, listen
download.
To this podcast.
Absolutely.
Because you got to do it within 24 hours, and you got to leave it on for at least 5 minutes for Nielsen gets the click that
but
we've got another brownie point.
But you won't be able to turn it off after 5 minutes. We're just that entertaining.
That's a great
just
point.
Just saying.
That's
true.
Really good.
It's true.
And speaking of entertaining, who would have thought you could spend hours talking about carabiners? But we have a guy in studio with us, Mark Schmidt. Schmidt is his name, that actually has taken carabiners to a level that we couldn't even imagine a few years ago. Who knew? I want to get back to the way the manufacturing of this and what you've built into the different carabiners, because we've got one here for skiing. We've got some, I'm guessing this one over here is for everyday use. I want to get back to these.
It's
in
actually
just
a skateboard one.
This is a skateboard one. Okay. I didn't ask you specifically where the idea came up for this. Did you tell us that already? Because I don't remember you saying where's the genesis of the idea?
So the genesis of the idea is I'm working with six engineers, my engineering staff, and I'm thinking, all right, I really need to do another big selling skateboard tool. Something that pays, you know, the mortgage, keeps the kids in school, a whole show. And I thought, what we need in skateboarding is we need one of those butterfly not ninja knives with all the tools on it. And all my engineering guys looked at me in horror as they thought about them being tied to a patent that ultimately led to a skateboarder's death, because instead of using the tools, they stabbed somebody. And they said, can we think of something else? And that the genesis was they thought of the carabiner form, or we all collectively thought of the carabiner form, and that became the platform where, okay, not only can we lighten the weight from the T-tool to a carabiner form, it can have all these additional benefits of being a keychain, of holding your backpack, of being holding your keys, all these different things that were valuable and that made it so. Here again, this was like one of these little moments where, hey, you're wearing that thing all the time. It's kind of like a 24/7, 365 marketing event for my business, and I like that.
And I bet it could be used as a style piece too. I mean, people can
oh,
wear these around.
It's such a hipster, right?
So it's not just for skateboarders. You could put anything in these things as long as people are going to use them.
Okay,
on the
so let's backpack. Let's piggyback on that. How many colors do they come in? Because I want it to match my jacket.
Oh no! So all the color stuff, the fashion stuff. So that's already built in. So part of our secret sauce as a business is we want people that see it to love it and want it before they even know what it does. And so if skateboarder sees this, they start thinking about, oh, there's the file for my grip tape. Oh, there's my axle covered. All right, this one's going to tighten up the kingpin. All right, I'm good. They're already, their wallet, you can hear the Velcro on their wallet tear open.
Because they're ready to buy it.
Exactly.
And speaking of that, before we get back to the development of this, where can people buy these now?
On clickcarabiners.com. Obviously, my website. They're available at Zoomies or select Zoomies locations. And then a bunch of skate shops around town. And most skate shops in areas, we're probably in over 1,000 skate shops worldwide.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Back to the idea, one more question about that. Was this a light that came on and just blew you away, or did the idea develop over time?
I'm always curious
about how that works.
So I was veering down a place where I was going one way and my engineering crew really pulled me the other way. And then we started thinking about the value of the carabiner and how underutilized the concept of just a carabiner is. And then it was, all right, let's put a tool set together on that. And then after I did the skateboard one, I thought, there's a company here, because this is a platform. So now we literally reverse engineer carabiner forms into niche markets. So we've got the K9 Abiner coming out for pet owners that does some really, really unique things. We've got the Charger Biner that is essentially a cable management play. When you think about, oh, I'm going on vacation, I got to get my charging cube and my cable, and where's that going to go? It's going to go in a bag, which is going to go in a bag, which is going to go in a bag. And by the time you've got three bags, you're wondering if you actually where you put it. And so the fact that we can put that on a carabiner and all of a sudden it's part of your keychain or backpack is going to be really, really valuable. That instant visual affirmation that, hey, I got my charger on me, and the most valuable thing in my life is my smartphone.
So you have two different models here, one for skiing, one for skateboarders.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you're coming out with another model for...
So we've got a snowboarding one as well. All three of those SKUs are on the market. So we've got a charging carabiner coming out within the next few months, and we'll do a Kickstarter campaign for that. We've got a bike carabiner coming out, which is going to be really exciting. Just based on market size, and it's a really cool piece. It weighs 39 grams.
All over the place you see people on bikes nowadays riding.
Yeah, big resurgence in, you know, and think about the hipster Portland cool thing, and all of a sudden, I'm imagining everybody with keys having something to hold their keys onto their belt loop or backpack, and it's going to be one of my carabiners.
There's an infinite number of niches here. Yeah, I mean, anything you can think of, if you're the type of person that does X, if you're an electrical engineer and you need a tool to strip, you know, the whatever
the wire.
Off the wiring.
Sure, sure.
You know, you can go in a million different directions.
Yep.
I'm just starting to get why this makes so much sense.
Yeah. So the marketplace for this here in just in the United States alone, I'm guessing, is huge for the different models you have. Have you developed any markets in other places yet?
Oh, yeah. So one of our big markets is in Japan. We also do really well in Europe. Anywhere there's so obviously we're in some niche markets right now, which are skateboarding, skiing, and snowboarding. So wherever there's concrete and snow, we're playing, and some disposable income and some ski resorts, we're playing in those fields and selling lots of products.
Now, if you make one for cowboys, then you can go out to the plains like Wyoming and Montana.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Cowboys have to have one of these. I'm not quite sure what you put on a cowboy one, but Montana, you would love that.
I'm available for consulting.
All right. Have all these ideas come from you guys, or do you guys look out at the world? Do people make suggestions, and then you say, yeah, we'll do that?
So I'm a big fashion junkie and a big a sport junkie. I mean, I love being my own test subject, traveling lots of places, getting lots of experiences, and figuring out where can I solve a problem. So one of our biggest markets happens to be in Japan, and surprisingly, a big percentage of that market is more aspirational than it is using the product. So we'll sell tens of thousands of our ski carabiner over there, but based on the amount of warranty we get back or based on the interaction, probably about half of those are just going on folks on Tokyo that want to look like they ski, so they've got one of these on their backpack. Or want to look like they snowboard.
This is a society that has golfing ranges, and people buy $2,000 sets of golf clubs just to go golf off of a range.
Standing on that 2-square-foot piece of grass in the middle of Tokyo.
Yes.
No chance for a swing, but that's their experience.
We call those posers.
hey, it's all right.
Yeah, but they're spending a lot of money for things that we develop,
consuming
too.
Posers.
Yes. Yes.
You're listening to Biz Talk. Mark Schmidt is with us, Art Function Group of Companies. The carabiner is the cool tool to have nowadays. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Schmidt.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. Tomorrow, our in-studio guests are Blaise Barillette, CEO of Cure Match, Bill Gooding, and Kimberly Nguyen, co-founders of Dreamvest Capital. Don't you dare miss the show. I'm Montana Schmidt.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. I just love doing this. This is like the funnest part of my day. And we get to talk to some very, very cool people. Mark Schmidt is in with us. His company manufactures the carabiner skate tool and the click carabiner, which is the... Is that the click carabiner is the one... That's the name of the company, but it... That's on your skiing carabiner.
Oh, well, so they're all called Click Carabiners.
Oh, they're
That's actually the brand.
That's the brand. And then you have models under the brand then.
Correct.
So this would be a skateboarder model. This would be a ski model.
Correct.
And you've got so many models that are, I'm guessing, on the drawing board. This is such a simple concept. When people look at it, you go, why hasn't somebody done this before now?
It really, absolutely true.
It's one of those kinds of things, right? The barrier to entry on this, though, I'm assuming is not that simple because of the manufacturing and the design behind these things. These have to be engineered fairly well.
Oh, without a doubt. There's a big engineering process, big testing process, big customer intimacy process where, you know, what can we do for the skier, the skateboarder, or the cell phone holder, or the pet owner that is something extraordinary and beyond what a normal company in that space will make.
Now, do these come with a warranty?
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about that.
Lifetime warranty.
Oh, it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah.
When you make a prototype, do you obviously you go around if it's a skateboard thing, you'll skateboard around with it and make sure it works the way that you think it should and want to. Do you also hand out like dozens of them or a couple to some of your friends in the industry and say, hey, tell me really what's going on? Have you got any good, really good feedback from some of your friends or other people that you've given prototypes out that are identifiable changes you've made to these?
Well, so just to take a step back. So when we did a Kickstarter for the ski and the snowboard carabiners, we made sure we had 100 of these in the hands of influencers so they could post on Reddit and essentially fuel our Kickstarter. Because so Kickstarter for us is really a pre-sale. So in other words, you need to do the pre-sale, or it's a pre-sale, and you need to seed all the marketing so that people are talking about you. All Kickstarter or Indiegogo do is they provide you a platform. You got to bring the audience. Mm-hmm. And that's the big aha. So you not only have to bring the audience in, you got to make them want to buy, and then a step further, make them want to share. So in other words, they're our superheroes, where if they absolutely love a project and they pass it along, their reward is, hey, I'm turning you on to something that's really cool and that's a great deal. So if you're not checking those boxes, you're not playing in that, or you're not running a successful campaign.
You said when you started out, the price point on these would have been in the $99 range, or was that the cost to manufacture?
So
originally,
so when you start out on a project, you're going to do a one-off sample.
Right.
That's going to be very expensive to make, and then you're going to start filtering it down to, okay, what do we really need what do the performance parameters need to be? How do we filter down that whole thing so we get maximum efficiency with minimum cost? So we went to the mold injection and dye stamping on the skateboard particular skateboard specific version, and these things are we have to make it so that it's not super simple to copy, but that it's still a price where somebody looks at it and goes, oh, no problem, I'm dropping $25 on that. And so that's the retail price of our snowboard carabiners. Sure.
That's well within the range of most people.
And skateboard carabiner is $12.99. That's two lunches at school. Kid's going to not buy lunches for 2 days so they can have our skate carabiner.
And it's fashionable.
Exactly.
The pocket protectors are gone. The waist holder for your phone is gone.
Hip bags are coming back though.
Are they really?
Big comeback.
I can bring them out of hiding now.
Is that like a fanny pack?
Fanny pack.
Yeah,
right?
It doesn't mean they look good. I still am getting used to high waisted pants. It's a tough time flying.
So the process right now in your world is to keep marketing the models that you have out right now and develop new ones to have a suite of products.
Correct. Correct. Family of products, all based on the carabiner form. Nice IP portfolio around all those different products. And anybody that associates the name Click Carabiner, they're thinking, oh, that's... So our little tagline is stay tuned, because what we really do is allow people to keep doing what they were doing, whether that's on the hill snowboarding, whether that was skateboarding, whether that was they need to charge their phone, whether that was taking their pet out for a walk, whatever it is, that was with our K9 Abiner.
K9 Abiner.
Yeah, that's our pet carabiner that's coming out.
I love the name.
Yeah, well, that's part of the fun, too, is to come up with a goofy name the K9 Abiner.
For our listeners out there who might have an idea, speaking of intellectual property, do you make something first and then go and patent it? Or is it possible that you just have an idea, you write it down on paper, and did you go out and actually say, this is something that we need to get in and patent?
So I always like making sure dollars are flowing in for product before dollars are flowing out for legal. So I have to have an order for something before I'll patent it. And not difficult for me to do because I'm pretty reasonably well connected, but I'll never guard my idea. I'd rather put my idea out to the universe, see what comes back, and then if it's hyper positive, followed by purchase orders, that'll be my, okay, that's filter strong there. Let's get this patented.
What industry so you've got one for skateboarders, one for skiers, so you're in two separate industries. I'm a assuming there's not a carabiner industry with carabiner conventions and all by itself, right? So
no, we would be playing in a bunch of different. I mean, so with our charging carabiner, we're going to be playing in the consumer electronics space.
Right. So you might see them at Fry's, you might see them at a sporting goods store, yep, at a skateboarding store, and online, obviously.
Yep. I have a feeling that's going to be your biggest seller. Just for whatever
What's
reason, the charging one.
Oh,
the people
yeah.
travel all the time, and you're always looking for your charger. You're digging through your carry-on bag. You might have forgot it. I mean, it's just a huge problem. Everybody has a phone they need to charge.
Yeah, well, there's I think 5 billion smartphones out there, and so we'll have our lightning plug version as well as our micro USB version for all the Android phones. And when you see it, it looks really cool. So it's a conversation starter. Again, this is really where utility is meeting fashion, meeting function.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So where do you go with the company when competition starts on? Because this is such a great idea, right? There's got to be other companies that look at this and say, we can do the same thing. Are you preparing for that? Or how do you think about that when you're developing something new to go to market?
It's really hard to make cool stuff.
Yeah.
And especially like.
So you're saying the barrier to entry on this is a lot higher than one might think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially when there's some IP wrapped around it. I'm not afraid to call my attorney and say, hey, sue this guy. He's infringing on our patent. And we've got a lot of design patents that are fortified with utility patents. And again, that's a subject matter that we can go super granular on, but that's boring stuff. Just come up with a cool idea, put it on a napkin, sell it to somebody, collect your dough, and be in business.
So how many different patents does one get on these things? I mean, you don't patent just the single item itself. You patent parts of it, right?
Both. So you do a design patent on your completed item, and if you can get a utility patent for whatever part of the carabiner. I'd love to have a patent on the carabiner itself, but that expired about 75 years ago or whenever Von Chouinard or whoever crew came out with the original product.
Schmitty, Mark Schmidt, Art Function Group of Companies, the Click Carabiner. The website is?
Clickcarabiners.com.
Clickcarabiners.com. Check them out. You can order them now, right?
You can.
Yay.
Shipping same day.
Thank
order
you
before 3. I'll get out of your hair right now. Make sure that stuff gets shipped.
Thank you so much, Mark Schmidt. You've
Thank
been
you.
Listening to Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Have a great and prosperous day. Bye-bye.